It's a pleasure to be here with all of you and my friends on the panel. What I'd like to do is take a few minutes to share with you the outlines, the basic thrust of a paper that Jeremy Travis and I have been writing for the executive session on policing, really invite your comments, your questions, but most importantly, your arguments with it. It's a set of concepts we're actively working on and hope will be useful. We offer the new professionalism as a framework that we hope can help police chiefs, frontline officers, communities understand what's going on in policing, as a way of keeping organizations focused, or their own individual work focused, or their relations with police from the community focused on what's going on how it can be better, on what it's trying to achieve. That the use of frameworks is familiar in lots of fields, and for a long time, in recent years, a general framework around community policing has been very useful in the police field. But that has, as Ellen suggested in the opening, been so added to over the years. We have so many concepts, ideas, priorities in policing that the cacophony is sometimes hard to deal with. And as Jeremy and I were listening to conversations over the last several years among police chiefs, watching what frontline officers do, working with a handful of departments on trying to improve work, we think we hear a few consistent themes that we have brought together under this organizing framework of the new professionalism. Those themes are accountability, legitimacy, innovation, and coherence, national coherence. So we think that we hear a movement in policing defined by these four elements, that a commitment to accountability on behalf of police departments, a concern with legitimacy, and we'll talk a little bit more about what we mean by that, a commitment to innovation, going beyond the kinds of innovations we've seen in the last several decades ago, and a new exploration and experimentation with, and perhaps even a commitment to greater national coherence in the policing field. Now, none of these is new. All of these are ideas that have been percolating, developing, gathering momentum over the last several years, maybe a decade or more. Indeed, we think all of these have some can trace roots back to the beginning of community policing in the late 1970s, early 1980s. But we do think they're coming together in a new way, and I'll talk a little bit about that. Let me say a little bit about why we think this is a new development. It's new. We call this the new professionalism for two different reasons. First, we want to contrast it with the professional model of policing that Ellen mentioned in her introductory remarks. That is, for a series of reasons that we'll talk about, but I think is unfortunate. The academic field, to some extent those who train and write about police reform in the United States, labeled the reforms of the 1950s and 1960s in the United States as the professional model of policing. And when community policing was first being discussed and debated in the 1980s and early 1990s, it was frequently contrasted with the professional model. And indeed, you will still hear very prominent chief executives in law enforcement today talk about how we still have to complete the work of getting away from the professional model and more into community policing. Well, the idea that police should be leaving a professional model of policing is a curious framework. It's an odd language to use. And in fact, many chiefs have told us that it leads to a lot of confusion. Why would we want to be professionals? Why should we be leaving a professional model of policing? So the new professionalism is a way of trying to reclaim what's good in professionalism, and try and help organize that thought, but not confuse it with the professional model of policing at mid-century. It's also new in a second sense. That is, We think that each of these elements, the accountability, the support for the pursuit of public legitimacy, the kinds of innovation and the kinds of coherence we're seeing now, we think are taking on new forms. We think they're developing in new ways. And we think it's important to mark that development. To the extent that that new professionalism can be achieved in police departments, we think it would be a substantial achievement and a turning point in many ways in the history of American policing. So let me start with the first of those. So the contrast, it's new as opposed to the contrast with the professional model of policing. Maybe I hope a few of you are at least as old as I am so you can recognize Adam 12, a television show that came right in the center of the ambition of the professional model of policing, as it was called. And although it was described as professional, and we think the term professional model was applied to the reforms of the 1950s and 1960s in policing, because in one sense, the conceptualizers, the people writing about this and talking about it, who like George Kelling, Mark Moore, and others, saw in that model both a good thing, that is an effort to protect the police, distance the police from the manipulations of political machines, of the corruptions that could come from too much political control or just the informality of policing in the early decades of the 20th century. The achievement of more rigorous recruitment, more rigorous training, tighter supervision were all designed to make real improvements on the kind of policing that the Wickersham Commission and others had seen and criticized in the early decades of the century. But it had a series of flaws, and Kelling and Moore and others wrote about those flaws and about the flaws of the professional model. What did they talk about? They talked about how the professional model was too removed from communities. The cocoon of the police, of the patrol car, became an image of the distance that police began to take from their communities. It had a very limited array of tactics, basically random patrol, rapid response, and the retrospective investigation of crimes. It was a command and control model, a top-down, disciplined notion of how police ought to work. You were in service, if not to your sergeant and your captain, at least to your dispatcher, but you were taking commands from above. And perhaps the most telling criticism of the professional model came about the ability of this so-called professionalism to sit right alongside continued racial bias in policing. I think in 1990, a really important paper as part of the first executive session in policing was co-authored by the two leaders of the Police Foundation. There was actually a one-year leader who will remain nameless for the first year of the Police Foundation, but then Patrick Murphy led Police Foundation for over a decade and very important years, and Hubie Williams then took it over and continues to lead it today. Those two leaders of that foundation together wrote a paper about criticizing the professional model of policing because of its connection to racial bias. So I'm just going to quote one passage from their paper written in 1990. The fact that the legal order, and they're describing this 1950s, 1960s model of professional policing, the fact that the legal order not only countenanced but sustained slavery, segregation, and discrimination for most of our nation's history, and the fact that the police were bound to uphold that order, set a pattern for police behavior and attitudes towards minority communities that has persisted until the present day. That pattern includes the idea that minorities have fewer civil rights, that the task of the police is to keep them under control, and that the police have little responsibility for protecting them from crime within their communities. Williams and Murphy went on in that paper to point out that until into the 1960s, a third of American police departments still restricted the rights of black officers to make felony arrests. They talked about the disappearance of black officers from most major police departments from the time of 1900 to the 1950s, and other facts that actually made them feel that calling the policing in the 1950s and 1960s professional was to miss the falsity of that profession, at least as experienced by African Americans. It is clear that the community policing that was championed as an improvement on this professional model was indeed, and I think continues to be, an improvement on all these features. There's nothing, I think, wrong with the critique of the professional model, except that it called what it was replacing professional. And the new professionalism is, in a sense, trying to redefine what police mean and should mean by professionalism, not connected to these features. So it's new in a second sense as well. So we want to let me just try and elaborate a little bit on what we see as new in these features. So police have always been accountable since probably at least the 1930s and 40s on. Internal accountability in policing is part of that command discipline we talked about. But the accountability that we see as new is a willingness to talk externally, talk in the language of accountability, and actually hold departments and hold themselves, chiefs and others, holding themselves accountable in a public way. When I started working on police accountability and with police agencies and writing about it in the late 1980s, early 1990s, several of my friends told me that was a great idea, but I should not use the word accountability because the police would leave the room if I talked about it as accountability. That was code for dealing with misconduct. They didn't want to talk about it. And you should use the word integrity. You should talk about lots of things, but do not talk about accountability. Today in Chicago, there's a deputy superintendent for accountability. That's the title. Accountability is championed by police executives in speeches all over the world. When Americans go abroad, American chiefs go abroad and train on modern democratic policing, they almost always talk about accountability as one of the features that marks a professional agency. Now, part of that is simply because accountability as an element of good government has become much more common in the last 10, 20 years. It's now embraced much more widely. But part of it also is a change in policing. Accountability is not just about conduct anymore. In fact, the three C's here refer to what we see when police agencies, when police leaders embrace accountability. The best of them talk about accountability for the three C's: for crime, accountability for crime, accountability and the problems associated with crime, accountability for cost, and accountability for conduct. We can talk about examples of how police departments are accounting for their costs in new ways in this last decade. It's pretty obvious, whether you think of CompStat, innovations across the country or other features in which departments are holding themselves and holding themselves publicly and internally accountable for crime. You see there are lots of examples of that. But on conduct, I want to also emphasize that accountability for conduct is not just accountability for misconduct. There have been new advances there. You think of Bill Bratton's public confession of error just days after the MacArthur Park disturbances, the breakup, police breakup of the immigrant rights rally in MacArthur Park in 2007. He comes back and actually holds a press conference and says we were wrong, says there was excessive force used, and takes strict discipline against the commanding officer on the scene. There are more of these public apologies for misconduct. But there's also, I think, a revolution in the accountability for controversial conduct that chiefs think is legal and legitimate. Take a look, if you haven't seen it, at the annual firearms discharge report issued by the NYPD every year. It is a remarkable document in which the department outlines every time a gun was fired by a police officer, talks about why they think the patterns are justified, even when they are highly disproportionate in terms of the race and ethnicity of those fired upon, and they defend that through a series of statistical and factual arguments. But they also describe when there has been discipline taken, the officers removed from the force, even ones that didn't make the press at all. So I think the public accountability for conduct has reached a new level as well. We talk about public legitimacy. Now, this is when Jeremy and I were putting this paper together, I was scared of using the word legitimacy. It sounds very academic, sounds very obscure, abstract term. But I've been surprised actually at how easily police executives I've been talking to have picked up on this idea. I mean, let me be clear. Legitimacy is important for any authority, any element of the state or other authority needs to attend to its own legitimacy, needs to understand the sources of legitimate authority as opposed to illegitimate authority. And there are many of those sources. The professional model of policing in the 1950s and 1960s emphasized law and sort of professional expertise as the legitimacy of that police force, of the police service. Community policing focused more on the consent and the connection with communities, often in community meetings, through community surveys, through engagement of active community participation in the work of community policing. Jeremy and I argue that a new professionalism needs to be ecumenical about this. These are all important sources of legitimacy: the law, democratic politics, professional integrity, and the public. But we focus particularly on public legitimacy, and particularly within public legitimacy, on the confidence of those most disaffected from society, the marginalized. Communities, whether those are marginalized and disaffected just because there are kids and they're in their teens and they're just disaffected as a general matter, or if they're members of ethnic or racial minorities who are disaffected perhaps from the society for other reasons. It's precisely in those communities that support for the police and confidence in the police is weakest. The latest Gallup survey from 2009 shows that when they ask people about the confidence in the police as an institution nationally, about 63% of white adults say they have confidence in the police as an institution. About 38% of black adults answer the question that way. And those patterns focus police departments on the legitimacy of the public. Thanks. We talk about innovation. Not just doing a few new things. There's always been innovation in policing, but we think we see innovation going on not just occasionally, not just at the front lines, as was often true with the problem solving of the 1990s and early part of this century, this decade, but indeed whole, as Herman Goldstein hoped would happen with problem-oriented policing, whole management teams, senior-level executives, innovating themselves at a department-wide level, and indeed the pursuit of continuous learning in organizations. Finally, we think we see trends in national coherence. This is our country is particularly fractured in its policing. Nobody in the world would ever dream of creating a system where you had an uncountable number, somewhere in the neighborhood of 20,000 separate police organizations, and how we achieve national coherence, although there probably has to be some consolidation, or we have to do something about the 80% of departments that have 25 members or less. We are not going to achieve coherence in this country through consolidating or the creation of a national police organization. We're only going to do it if we do it at all through professionalism and through developing a common set of practices, expertise, understandings that moves across departments, we hope, with increased mobility. Let me just say, finally, to set up the debate that Jeremy and I are having with David Sklansky about this within the session, let me just say a few closing words about the connection between this new professionalism and community policing. Because we do think that while community policing is a part and has always been a part of the rise of this new professionalism, we think that it's important to see community policing as embraced by the new professionalism, but not the same as it, and that the new professionalism goes well beyond, I hope, what community policing is doing. So let me just recall a debate that occurred during the first executive session. Ed Meese, then Attorney General, was a part of that session, and Mark Moore, my predecessor as the Guggenheim Chair at Harvard, both in that session. And Mark had proposed this idea that the professional model had been fine for its time but was really in trouble now, and community policing should really replace the professional model. And indeed, he said he thought was happening with the community model to find a whole new era. Ed Meese said that was a bit grandiose. He thought, yeah, there's this nice thing going on with community policing, that's important, but it's really just a small part of what he called a strategic policing. That was really, he thought, what would mark the 1990s. And he said, you know, I'm happy to support this community thing as long as you just say it's an important contribution, but a lot of other things are going on too, and you don't want to exaggerate the importance of the community part of it. What's interesting is that Mark Moore did not argue with that. He agreed all those other things were going on, problem solving, strategies, work on crime and robbery. But he said, you know, if we call it strategic policing, the police won't do the hardest part of all, which is actually building strong relations with communities. So he wanted to call the new movement community policing, not because he thought it embraced all its elements, but because it thought it would focus police agencies on the hardest bit, the bit that they would probably ignore if left to their own devices. So that's what we got. We got community policing, and it worked as a rhetorical matter. I think Mark was right, and it took off with a big help from Bill Clinton and the cops office and a lot of money. Community policing became recognizable as a phrase to most Americans. It became recognizable as a federal funding stream. But it is not clear that you actually got the kind of community engagement that we hoped for. I will just race through because I'm out of time here. Some of the things that the community policing did not turn out to actually have an answer to. It was not expected community policing would be accompanied by a huge increase in the volume of Americans being arrested by the police. The idea was there'd be other tactics. In fact, we've seen a tripling of arrest rates per 100,000 at the same levels of crime. It did not anticipate a huge surge in stop and search. Even today, police chiefs who are the leaders of community policing turn to one another and say, oh, and gee, can we talk about what the role of the community is supposed to be? Because I'm not sure anybody knows what the community is supposed to be doing in community policing. It's a bit late. It does not tell us much about how to police political dissent, whether you think of the recent political conventions or the last decade or other elements of it. It does not talk about how to balance privacy and the huge expansion of covert surveillance available to police agencies today. It does not talk about how to manage the difference between disrupting criminal operations or actually arresting and prosecuting criminal operations. These are recognizable problems, I hope you understand, and community policing is a valuable thing, but the new professionalism, we hope, is a way of addressing all of these and more. Community policing, at least in our view, a valuable, important thrust, but it has simply become too vague today to really guide operational decisions and answer the concerns that departments have. In the end, I think Jeremy and I believe that community policing is a hugely important part of what we mean and we see in the new professionalism. But police need frameworks today that help them understand how they do use force, how they are making arrests, the appropriate use of stops, how to use this new surveillance technology, how to deal with new kinds of expectations of privacy. These are fundamental issues of our democracy. And the role of the police in this democracy is really at stake right now. Police agencies need to understand how even when they are controlling, sometimes forcefully, elements of political dissent, they are still encouraging, not suppressing, our democratic traditions. We believe that the new professionalism that we see is a way of engaging those questions, a way of guiding the answers. In short, we think that professional policing enhances democratic progress when it accounts for what it does, achieves public support, learns through innovation, and transcends parochialism. That's what the four elements of the new professionalism are, and we think we see them in American policing today. We want to applaud them, and we want to see them continue. Thanks very much for your attention.